welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 208. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me today for this dangerous episode of the podcast, we have John, Handle with Care Jordan.
Hello, how are you?
We have Peter, Contains Scenes of Mild Peril, Willington.
Hello.
And Keith, Retired to a Safe Distance After Lighting, Andrew.
I was wondering where you're going with that, but yeah. Hello.
I was going somewhere hilarious, Keith. No. Everyone's here. This is like a big group. This must be how Germany felt in 1990 after the reunification.
I was wondering where you're going with that.
I did wonder that one. It's like, ooh.
This is a bad start all over, if I'm honest.
Oh, I thought it was slick. I've probably offended and confused people in equal measure. In the first 60 seconds, it's off to a...
Who is East Germany in this?
It was more of a general. You can pick sides if you want. But
were they the communists?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I'll be East Germany because they got all the good trance music.
Oh, we're not getting back into a conversation about trance. We're having a lame conversation about trance.
But only because they weren't allowed to have lyrics, because otherwise it would have been banned. So they had to be instrumental or ambient.
Yeah, exactly. And also, guitars were outlawed by the Reds. That's true. That's actually a fact.
Guitars are evil, yeah.
Yep. Wow. Is that true, John?
What?
About lyrics?
I've not heard any... I don't know about trance music, goodness.
But you see, your word carries so much weight.
It sounded like, you know, deep political commentary there.
Yeah.
No. It was just lies, filthy lies, which you'll hear a lot of on this podcast, no doubt. We didn't have a great deal of news last week, so we did a kind of roundup of the interesting, exciting games which are going to be coming out this year, one of which has already landed, and we will be discussing with our podcast audience.
There's more games coming out this year.
I know, they haven't stopped yet. It's such a drag.
We had enough.
I know, I thought we had enough games. It's like football. It's like, can't they just all play, decide who's the best, and then leave it? They have to keep playing again and again, even the same teams with each other. I mean, what's the point, really? Nope, just me. All right, fine. Well, we're going to run through. There's been a lot of new stuff in the update world this week, so we'll bash through updates and then get down to some nitty-gritty topical stuff, which is a bit dangerous. So we'll head over to the news. Right, first things first, before we get all topical in that, there have been a bunch of updates for very high-profile games, which were all released, like, over yesterday and today. So, we'll bash through a few of those, and we can get busy with interesting things. First of all, Cut the Rope has got a brand new update, which is called the Steam Box, coincidentally, in the same week as Steam. Talk about a Steam Box, but it's not that Steam Box. Oh no, this one is an actual box with Steam in it.
You don't know that the Steam Box from Valve isn't exactly the same. It sounds like a lot of hot air to me anyway. Thank you.
Job done. Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. We'll catch you next week. Yes, and they've done, because all the Cut the Rope worlds are kept in little boxes. And this new one has got little steam valves in. So the idea is that you got Om Nom and he's trying to get his candy and the candy falls down, but little valves are releasing steam. The steam kind of helps the candy float upwards and you can guide it towards his mouth. And there's a little valve in the lower right-hand corner which you can twist and affect the whether the steam is on or off. So there's a whole new dynamic there for Cut the Rope fans to get their teeth into, which I'm interested in because I like Cut the Rope. So yeah, check that one out. I assume it's free. And we're now up to what? 325 levels. That's not bad.
It's Angry Birds territory, this.
Speaking of which, Angry Birds Space has got a brand new update which has added 30 new levels based on water planets. It's called the Pig Dipper. Do you see what with this constellation, right? And then the star is Angry Birds Space, yeah. So and there's pigs, so there's a dip, yeah. Anyway, it's got planets that are all composed entirely of water. So if you've played the other water levels in like Angry Birds Seasons and stuff, If you stick a bird in the water, it kind of floats up to the top again. And when you're dealing with the gravity of the planets in Angry Birds space, it kind of pulls them back down. So you've kind of got these things where you can do interesting trick shots where you go into the water and then out and into space and then down again and back into the water. So it's like gravity versus flotation, I suppose. So you can download that now as well. That's free. Also, another big game. This is something that John pointed out to me in the Skype window. Clash of Clans, which I know is a sort of... You're into it, John, aren't you? And
I've not played for a while, actually.
Yeah. You went through a period, went through a spell,
yeah,
didn't you?
Spell, yeah.
A little sort of amorous.
John was into it before it became cool, you see. He was ultra hardcore.
Yeah, true. And Peter picked it up later, didn't you?
Yeah, when it wasn't cool anymore.
Peter's why it's not cool, actually. He picked it up, and that's what happened there. But we've got some new classes, what appear to be new classes anyway. Supercell have released a video containing images of two new characters, one called the Barbarian King and the other one called the Archer Queen. From what we can make out from the video and the text, the Barbarian King is like massive, a big bugger, bigger than a giant, and appears to mash his way through towers and big crossbow platforms and whatnot with relative ease, so he looks big and hard. And the Archer Queen is, unsurprisingly, a lassie who fires crossbow bolts from a distance and apparently is very accurate, or so says the blurb.
I think the thing that's not clear quite at the moment is because they're both updates of existing kind of character classes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure whether it's just like you could only level up like up to a level 3 giant or archer, so maybe this is they put in level 4 uh-huh. ones, or whether they're actually just pure a new class.
I see. Yeah,
that's one thing that's not clear at the moment. So, but yeah, no, look, yeah. I mean, I guess with all these kind of games, particularly something that's been so successful for so long, is you get people, after a while, there's not very much more for them to do, so you have to keep adding new expensive things for them to, and I don't mean expensive necessarily in terms of hard money, but you obviously build up a lot of soft currency in the game as well, so you have to keep inventing new things for people to spend their hard money, soft currency on.
Yeah. Otherwise you end up with big piles of pointless cash, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Well, they look big and exciting, and if you're into Clash of Clans, I'm sure you'll be all over that in a second. So, three big updates for three big games. Now, let's get a bit more topical and conversational. There's been a couple of little Apple controversies this week. One more valid than the other, I suppose. We'll start with this one. Apple has rejected a game based on and around the Syrian Civil War. Now, the thing is, Apple has a policy. Obviously, it's very much more cautious than something like Google Play, which has a much more sort of forgiving attitude of like, have you got a game? Yeah, go on then. That's pretty much it. That's their vetting process. It's like, you know, do you have a game and can you upload it to the interweb? Brilliant, you're in. Whereas Apple vets it and they have teams of scientists looking at it and then they run it past a team of chinchillas and they have a look at it and then they bury it in the ground in a metal box for 5 weeks and then dig it up again, make sure it's still there. And then and only then can you have your app on the App Store. And this one, which is called Endgame Syria, has fallen foul of it. There's a specific line in the App Store blurb which says that you are not allowed to release games which solely target a specific race, culture, a real government, or corporation. So the idea is if one of your enemy classes is like entirely, say, Russian or entirely English or entirely white or black or whatever, then you're not allowed to have your game published in the App Store. This is against the rules. Thing is, this is obviously based on a real event that's actually happening. This isn't some fictional thing, and it's kind of a satirical app in and of itself. The app is supposed to show you how nobody really wins in war, and so it's not deliberately going out of its way to offend anybody. And the developer has kind of, you know, stepped up and said this is kind of a shame because it, quote, makes it hard to talk about the real world. Is Apple being overcautious here, or do they have a valid point and this sort of stuff shouldn't be on the App Store?
I think that's a bizarre reason, but I wouldn't have greenlit this.
No?
I can't understand. It may be satirical, but I think it's very tacky to something that's still happening now that I'm assuming these people haven't been over and don't actually know what's going on.
Mm.
It seems really tacky to try and tag it onto something that... Is in the news now.
Can I interject a little bit quickly? So I've done an interview, which will be going live on the site in the next week or two, with Thomas Rawlings, who's the guy who makes the game. And or at least kind of, yeah, he's the designer. And it's part of a larger series of games that are made extremely rapidly. They're made within a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, that kind of thing. And it all of them touch on real-world news and issues that arise in general media, all of them. So this is the latest in a long series. So it's not a specific marketing campaign.
Yeah, right? But this is the first one about war.
This is the first one, I believe, that they've done about war. I think the next one, and I think I'm okay with saying this, the next one is revolving around drugs. And so these are big ideas, obviously, and this is an ongoing war. And yes, you might sort of say, well, perhaps they knew that this might happen when they were developing FireOS, or perhaps they had an idea that this might happen. Mm. But I don't necessarily think that it's tacky. It's exploring a very difficult subject within a medium that traditionally is difficult to get across big ideas like this.
You can do that, though, without actually tagging it onto a war that's happening now that we don't really know about. We're all going from whatever the media is telling us. We're not there. And you can make that point. You could use a past war, or you could use a fictitious war. I just think it's particularly in bad taste to, even if the point he's trying to make is a good one, I've not played it, but what James is suggesting there, that, you know, there is no winner. I think something where people's lives are right now being impacted by this thing, I think it's naff to try.
Why is this medium not allowed to look at current events?
Because if someone goes over to Syria and makes a documentary about it, they're trying to deal with real world facts. Or if someone tries to make a film that talks about it, you would suggest they probably wouldn't do it until it was over, because otherwise you're talking about something you don't actually know what the conclusion is. But to actually kind of make a game about something that's happening now, where people are dying, I just think it. If he's generally trying to say that, you know, if it's a war doesn't have any point, essentially, kind of thing.
I think he's also highlighting the fact that Syria is, that there are some awful things going on in Syria at the moment. You only get to play as the rebels, I believe. I think there is actually a sort of political message going on within the game itself, and that the regime in place is not exactly the best sort of government.
Presumably, this is the issue that Apple would have.
Yes, absolutely.
If you called them the Assyrians and had it 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, that'd be fine. And if you had it, you could play both sides. That would probably be fine as well. I mean, probably less fine, but whether we agree with how Apple has stated that or not, I mean, they've always had, and they've always kind of enforced those terms and conditions. Doesn't really matter. I mean, the game will come out on Android. And it's fine.
I think anything like
games out on Android, actually, I think.
Is it?
Yeah.
You risk. I mean, it's funny, we're talking about East Germany. You risk becoming almost propaganda. You know, I'm not pro Syrian government, but I think I'm assuming he's not Syrian, or there right now. So how can he make that judgment?
Yeah, but Keith, but I mean, the wider political point is that people who aren't part of a country who aren't there can still make points about it. You can't just say, well,
usually successfully with games. I mean, it's not a gaming strong point. Games that try and make political points are rare and mostly unsuccessful. And I
agree with that. Yeah, but that doesn't mean people shouldn't try.
Someone who isn't there, so he's forming his opinion off I don't know what, but for someone who isn't there to try and make a point about a conflict that's still going on, where people's lives are, you know, if he was an expert, if he knew he'd been out there, or
I believe he is actually talking with experts out there, and I know certainly that that's definitely happening with the drug one at the moment, but I'd have to go back and re-listen to my interview, but yeah, I think he is speaking with people.
But the fact is, I mean, the Keith's argument is not Apple's argument. Apple's argument is a much broader one than that. So there's two.
Well, sure, Apple would just rather no one touch anything like this with a barge pole. It's not something they're ever going to feature. It's not something which shows, you know,
in a sense, it's kind of ironic that there's plenty of, you know, like our iPad game of the year was Battle of the Bold, which is clearly a war strategy game, which is highly, at one point, was in.
But that's something, but that's an event that's an event that's been, you know, documented. There are multiple sources. You don't have to have been there.
The question is, it just happened 60 years ago.
Well, no, but I mean that's fundamental, because this is still happening now. It's a bit like old guy at the gates of outside number 10. Did he say pleb? Did he not? You know, everyone thought he did, and then suddenly he comes out. Oh, maybe he didn't, because, you know, there's this camera shot showing there was no one there, and all. You know, we don't know what is happening there, and I think it's. We may well find out in X amount of time that the people we think are the good guys aren't the good guys, or the war we think is being fought actually isn't being fought for that reason. I think it's very dangerous to try and, you know, make a statement about something that people in real life actually.
But I don't think he's trying to necessarily. Yeah. See, I don't think necessarily trying to make a documentary about it. They're trying to throw light on it.
But there's only two ways. You know, there's only two ways you can look at it. He's either genuinely trying to make a point about an event, which is why he's chosen this particular event, or he is tagging on a game that could actually be about any war onto something he thinks will get him high, you know, get him a lot of attention. So, you know, the latter is worse than the former. But if a Syrian had made this and were trying to make a point, I'd have a lot more sympathy than someone who, you know, is looking at it from the outside.
I think it's definitely the former of your ideas on that one. Certainly it didn't come across to me when I met up with him that it was that there was any sort of like tackiness. It wasn't trying to sort of fan flames or anything like that. But I think the larger question is one that sort of John touched upon, which is that there is very little nuance in terms of Apple's approval process. You know, we have games like, I don't know, let's go to kind of like an extreme example, like Civilization Revolution, for example. You play as countries, you play as governments, you play as, you know, real people from history, and that game gets through. But this one doesn't, and I guess the larger question that this raises is, why is a game like that allowed on the store according to Apple's terms of service, and yet a game that's about a modern war that's not? And I you know, whether or not you think it's in good taste, whatever, I think a bigger part of this problem is how Apple deals with the content that goes out through its store.
There's also, taking it away from the war situation, if you're dealing with controversial apps, there was I think it was actually called Sweatshop. There was a game that was made, I think, by the BBC or Channel 4, one of the terrestrial TV stations, which was essentially focusing on the exploitation of sweatshop workers in factories. And again, it was sort of an edutainment sort of thing where you're playing it and it's making a point, but it was also quite a good game in the process. That got through, and I was quite surprised it did, because again, it's these kind of apps tend to fall foul. If they're trying to make either political points, often Apple can have a little bit of a problem with it. I mean, obviously there are some shock horror apps which were released, like that one which was based on the Apple workers committing suicide and that sort of thing, and they get taken down. And you can kind of see, like, yeah, that's just being controversial for controversial sake, perhaps. I've always been a bit iffy on the whole concept of war games as it stands. I don't even really like Call of Duty, because I feel it's a bit weird playing through World War II for entertainment, because I always have this image of, like, you know, my grandfather or something walking in and going, "What are you doing?" You know, playing that, and what is this that you're up to? And you're like, "Oh yeah, that thing that all your mates died in. Yeah, I'm doing that for, like, prestige points." And it's just like, I don't, it feels a bit weird.
So. It's human nature. It's a passing of time thing. Things that are one day controversial or upsetting in 20 years time become jokes. You know, that's just human nature. I think,
so if you left it 10 years, then...
It's not a case of that. I just think that surely this guy must have known that this was never going to get through. Never. So when he's decided, right, I'm going to do a game that in whatever sense it's based around a war that's still going on, it was never going to get through Apple. The one store it was never going to get through is this one. So why do it? You know, because we're sat here talking about it, which is even worse. So I don't know. If he's got half a brain at all, he would have known this was never going to get through. So you just have to question why he did it anyway. You know, why not just go straight to Android?
Well, it'll be interesting to see if you say he's working on a new one based around drugs, Peter. It'd be interested to see whether that makes it through. If he's doing these really quickly, I assume that they'll get submitted quite quickly, I'm guessing. So I guess we'll find out soon. But it's not the only thing that Apple's been banning this week. There has been a standard policy on the App Store that once you've submitted an app, so if you're a developer, you submit your app, it gets approved, and you submit it with a bunch of screenshots and all the data and everything. Then it gets posted up on the App Store and you're away. It seems that once it's posted, you have then been allowed to go in and adjust the screenshots. So swap out the existing screenshots for new ones. Perhaps you didn't like the look of them, or perhaps there are updates coming and you wanted to, you know, reflect the new content with the screenshots. What this has meant is that some unscrupulous types have been submitting kind of in like nothingy copycat apps with, you know, generic names. And then once they've been approved by Apple, they've been going in and swapping out the screenshots for, it's like, pictures of Minecraft, for example. And this has been duping some App Store customers. Obviously, it's in violation just in principle, and clearly they're not allowed to misrepresent the game as another game. But there seem to be numerous instances where this has occurred. One that we noticed from way back was a God of War game, which is called God of War, has a completely different App Store icon, but the screenshots are like pulled from the PS3 version of God of War, and it's been up for months and it's still up now. I checked today, so no one's taken it down, which seems peculiar. So,
when it comes to Apple's procedures for the App Store, you kind of think, well, you know, don't be ridiculous about these things we've had a bit of argument about. Something no one has a problem with is people misrepresenting what's up there.
Picking up other people's stuff.
I mean, just like, come on.
Well,
if it's got a God of War PS3 screenshot attached to it, then maybe you should probably like play that game and make sure it doesn't go live. I think that's always the problem with Apple is, and that's the reason we still talk about these kind of like contrasting situations, is because clearly a lot of weird stuff does for whatever reason. You know, no one exactly knows how Apple kind of police what goes on in the store, but presumably a lot of it is automated because they just have so much stuff going through there, unless you have, you know, the whole city of Seattle kind of, or San Francisco kind of checking daily what's being submitted, then it has to be automated. So but I think that's kind of I'm sure the more annoying thing that a lot of clearly kind of scam things are going on there that Apple presumably is trying to deal with, but it's just the volume thing.
This is the thing, it's clearly a loophole where they can submit it with generic pictures and then change them later. So obviously that's, you know, they've got past the approval process, and I assume they have to wait till someone goes back and checks again, and that's why these apps are able to publish these, you know, salacious screenshots. So what they've done is they've decided to close the loophole by saying, and this is from the update on the iTunes Connect notice, beginning January the 9th, app screenshots will be locked in iTunes Connect once your app has been approved. New screenshots may be uploaded when you submit a binary for an update to an existing app or a new app. But that's it. So, now, once you submit your application and you give them the screenshots, that's it. You may not upload any more screenshots. You may not swap them out unless you submit an update or something like that. So this is Apple's way of kind of closing that loophole and making sure that the screenshots they view for the submission process will be the only ones that go up on the site. I guess that sort of seems reasonable. I mean, I'm not a developer, so I don't know how useful
Keith knows all about this thing.
Well, there was another one. I noticed you published something else, Keith, on another loophole or point that they've done relating to images and misrepresenting or cross-marketing, that sort of thing.
This one, kind of John was saying, no one's arguing with the fact that the practice of putting up screenshots that aren't from your game needs to be stopped.
Sure.
The question is the fact that, as usual, they didn't tell anyone they were going to do this. And secondly, it's a kind of blanket ban because, you know, no one really understands the science of screenshots. It's a bit like the app icons. It's something that people learn from as they go through, and quite often developers are looking to switch screenshots around when they're not updating just because they don't think one's particularly working, or, you know, there's just they get a better screenshot. It's not a massive issue, but it's annoyed developers because, yet again, something that a lot of them do by habit, you know, has been pulled from beneath them and now they can't do that anymore. And they weren't told. And it's with all these things that Apple kind of, you almost feel like just these blanket bans they bring in, they don't really consider how this might impact the people who are behaving perfectly fine and don't ever do anything dodgy. And
it does seem that people are, well, developers are kind of in the situation where they don't like it, but they have to just sort of get on with it. There doesn't seem to be a big revolt or anything where everyone's turned around and says this is bang out of order. People kind of grumble about it and then get on with it, don't they?
Yeah, it's interesting actually. I mean, John was saying to me earlier that and it reminded me when I first came on Biz and things like this would happen, it would be very hard, like blood from a stone, to get anyone to say anything remotely negative about any decision like this. Even if you knew that actually they were furious, if you asked them for a kind of comment, they would always say, oh, no, everything's fine. Or they wouldn't say anything at all.
For fear of, like, red sniper dots appearing on their foreheads.
They're much more willing now to say when they're annoyed, you know. And this, I didn't, you know, the comments we've had so far were actually kind of automatically generated. People just took to Twitter straight away and started slagging it off. Mm. And they were annoyed. And it's interesting how that has changed, that developers
I think, yeah, the big thing that was iOS 6 was a big one as well that a lot of people complained about, didn't they? That just really went down badly.
I wonder if there'll be a tipping point. If at some point, I just don't really... I don't see anyone ever complaining to the point where Apple will do anything about it or change their habits.
It'll never be anything like this that actually causes anything to happen, either that there's a revolt and everyone leaves the App Store or that Apple actually pay any attention. But it's a sign of a shift in the power because people aren't... There are other places they can go now. Then the App Store isn't the be-all and end-all for a lot of other developers. You can go to other marketplaces now, and increasingly so. You know, over the coming year or years, it won't all be about Apple. So, you know, I suspect they'll continue to do things like this, but the problem is that people won't be, you know, it won't define everyone else's business like it has done.
Well, we'll have to wait and see whether it has a lasting impact. But in the meantime, if you are a developer and you're listening to this, make sure the screenshots are good that you send in, because they're going to be the only ones.
Get screenshots of someone else's game that's better. That's what I think.
Yes, that's the no one's thought of that before. That's a genius plan, is it? Minecraft's popular, I hear.
Or a PS Vita game. Put that on there. Yeah,
because that's doing brilliantly. Anyway, away from the politics and towards the new games. You've got loads of new releases. There was not much last week, so everyone's piled them all in this week. So let's go and have a look at the new releases roundabout. First game we're going to talk about on the new releases this week is Xenonia 5, which is a relatively big number for an iOS game. And the company, it's Gameville, or Gamevil, as I prefer to call them, is really keen on shipping these games out pretty much one every however many months. If you haven't played any of them before, it's a sort of old school RPG, you know, top down 2D affair, Zelda-esque, if you like, where, you know, you're a dude and there's some evil and you've got to fight that evil with your dude and, you know, the stuff happens. It's one of the action ones, though, so it's real time combat, not turn based like your Final Fantasy or Secret of Mana or something. And there's loads of them. I had a go on it earlier on. It's more of the same, is the kind way of putting it. But they're not, I don't know, they're not bad. They've never really grabbed me hugely because it does feel very generic. But it plays okay, and they've always got a really a nice art style going on. The characters, the sprites, the animation, all of that's really high quality for the genre. But I don't know, it's they've always been a little bit too just sort of samey for
I
my
think it's, life. It's fair to say they have a very big fan base, particularly in Korea, because they have that grinding thing, and the people who like them buy them. But you know, I don't think it's a hardcore audience.
Sure. Well, they keep churning them out, and they keep getting good ratings. So, and they're not badly done. Like I say, you don't play it and think it's junk or anything, but it's just that it's very much, I've played this game 1,000 times. But like you say, big hardcore audience, and so people are into that. You can go and get it right now. I'm not sure how much it costs. Better just check that. Usually free to play. I think
they're free to play.
Yeah, they are. They started off costing money, but
the ironic thing is because they started off, the first Xenonia was a Java game in Korea, and it was free to play in Korea. But because when they first launched it on, I think the first one it was Xenonia 2 or 3. But when they did it for the first time for iPhone, you couldn't do in-app purchases, so they had to do it as a paid game. So it took them, even though they were taking the in-app purchases out of it to do the iPhone version.
Gotcha.
Weird.
Yeah, so now you can pick them up. Yep, free to play. There's in-app purchases and stuff if you want. But if you're a fan of that, go and have a look. A kind of cool one that I saw, and I'll be talking about another one of these companies' games later on, is a game called Time Surfer, which is a kind of endless runner. The way that they describe it is a mixture of Tiny Wings and Braid, that kind of indie adventure thing that's on XBLA it was, and did it get to PSN? I can't remember.
I think they did everything in the end.
Did they? Yeah. So, which has a time reversal mechanic, basically. So you're this little dude, and you're zooming along on your surfboard, your space surfboard, shooting across the planet, very much like the bird does in Tiny Wings, you know, up and down those little hills and scooting off in the distance. But you've got to dodge obstacles and avoid enemies, and there are spiky blocks that are in your way. And if you happen to smash into one of them, you can employ a time reversal thing, send time back, and then correct your mistake and swoosh on over the top. So it's mashing up those two things. It's done in a nice pixel arty style. It's kind of colorful. It's a bit zany, a bit LSD looking. And it's gotten really good ratings, actually. I think we reviewed it, and we've given it a silver, I think, saying it was really quite good fun, and all the feedback's been very positive. I like the look of it. Has anyone seen this one?
No, but Time Surfer does sound like the kind of TV movie you find in Wilkinson's.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. Yeah. That would be absolutely brilliant.
And I would also buy it.
What would the strapline be for that film?
Time Surfer.
Time Surfer. You're out of time, dude. Or something.
That sounds good, yeah.
That would work.
That would work. If it had a kind of Matthew McConaughey lookalike or something.
So the only problem I have with time-based games is it's almost like they... I mean, they're not always, but it's quite hard to design them in such a way that you... Because obviously most games, you don't want to hit the obstacle or anything. The whole point is you're skillful and you avoid them. So almost like they're making it very difficult, so you have to use the mechanic of time, because otherwise you can't complete them. So there's always a bit of a slight kind of conflict, I feel, sometimes in the design of them.
And they can break flow, can't they? Because if you're constantly going back and then going forward again and going back...
Yeah. I mean, I think they, when they work like Braid, then obviously... That had been thought about for a long, long time and was a very kind of concept-led game where time was a massive part of it.
It was also a puzzle thing. It didn't rely on speed or momentum or anything. So it is odd to have one stopping and starting. But, I mean, people have mentioned that, and I think our reviewer points it out, says it's a bit weird at first to get used to it, but it does end up working for you in the end. And it's fun and it looks good and the music's great and stuff, so... That's probably worth a look. And I was playing their previous game beforehand, which is also kind of good fun. So Time Surfer, go and have a look at that. We'll move on to the big one for this week, really, which is Joe Danger, which we were discussing last week as one of the games that we were anticipating for 2013. We hoped it would be good. We'd seen previews that suggested it was good. And we've reviewed it, and it's good.
Yeah. Phew.
Yeah, I know. Thank God for that. Otherwise, it would have been egg on our face. Yeah, it turns out it's really good. The comparison that we made last week, and it stands up now, is that if you think about the original console version of Joe Danger, which was available on XBLA and I think PSN as well, where it was essentially a Trials-esque game where you control the motorbike, zooming along, up ramps, looping the loop, doing tricks, all that kind of stuff. Big, colourful, cartoony, good sense of humour, played really well. And if they were going to try and bring that to, directly to your iOS device, then it would mean a bunch of controls on your screen, and it would perhaps not translate as well as it does onto a physical controller. So what they've done is the same thing that Ubisoft did with Rayman. When the Rayman Origins game came over to iOS, they changed it from a standard platformer to an endless runner. So all you had to do was tap the screen and little Rayman would jump. And what this did was make it playable in a very real and very engaging way on your iOS device without having to fiddle around with floating controls and whatnot. They've done the same thing with Joe Danger. So it's now a kind of endless runner, endless driver, whatever you want to call it.
It's level-based, though, isn't it?
So. It's level-based, but I mean, sorry, what would you call these? Automatic runner, automatic driver, where it just accelerates of its own accord, and it's up to you to tap to jump or double tap to double jump, and you control it that way.
Do wheelies.
Wheelies, yes, wheelies.
Slide back to wheelies.
Yeah. All those other tricks that you do on a bike that I don't know. Now, I know at least one of us has actually played this.
Yeah, I played it as well.
You played as well? Too sweet. Yeah. So how does it stand up? What's the verdict?
Do you want to go first, Keith?
Well, I only played it for like 20 minutes just before coming on. Mm. And I have not played the one on consoles at all.
Okay.
And I would say, yeah, it isn't anything like Trials or anything like that. It's all very tap-tappy, actually. It's kind of a reactions-based thing from what I can see. I mean, as well as the levels I was playing, as well as actually controlling him, you're then picking up letters and touching to get rid of barriers that are in your way along the way. It's just a kind of almost, you've got to kind of play it on the edge of your seat. Oh, there's something, I've got to tap that, which is good, because that's, you know, that's essentially what these devices are best at, actually. So, yeah, and with all of these games, like, from anything post Angry Birds to me, it's always that extra level of detail, just the way it's presented, the kind of music, the sound, these kind of extra little just touches that other developers miss out on that really help layer what is quite a simple experience when you think about it and turn it into something much bigger. It's a good studio, you know, that comes
I mean yeah
it's Hello Games, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can completely tell that before they set up on their own. Because I think when they set up, there's only like five of them. They were, I think, they're at a Criterion, so they'd worked on really big, massive console games, and you can just tell they spent their time doing this, and it's like a real work of love, and just the UI and I think some people might find. I mean, it doesn't really matter for gameplay because you're not in control of the perspective. You're just kind of tapping and doing these kind of things, but the perspective sometimes is a little bit kind of odd. So I'm not necessarily sure it'd be like a massive mass market hit, but. In terms of people who, I guess you would say more kind of, we don't say core games anymore, but you know, people who are kind of like just to play the game and not worry about in-app purchases and that kind of stuff, I think it'll do really well.
I think it built up a pretty strong following on PSN. It was, was highly regarded. We actually asked some of our listeners, like, whether they were interested. Have they played Joe Danger? What was their response? And Peter, I think we got some responses, didn't we?
We certainly did. So basically, the idea is, what we do is we ask a question before we record the podcast. So usually we ask about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that sort of thing, because we record at 6 at night. I'm pulling the curtains back, I know. So we asked what people think about Joe Danger. We had a couple of different responses. So Vaughan on Twitter says, an intuitive and brilliant small screen sized addition to the Joe Danger series. Amazing for a two-man effort. Praise. And also my favorite commenter my favorite commenter ever, genuinely, a man that goes by the name of Contest Chris on Pocket Gamer. He says, I just want it on Android.
Oh,
like, you can feel the I just want it on Android, guys.
I'd quite like it on Android. I think they're focusing only on the iOS at the moment is what they're saying, but
The reason I wanted to kind of read that one out is because actually we had a news story run ages and ages ago when they announced Joe Danger Touch, and they were talking about the Android version coming out. They were working on one, but that seems to have kind of fallen away a little bit,
as so often happens.
Yeah.
I think you have to remember these are not large teams. As soon as you've got less than 10 people, and they're still working on the console stuff as well. So it's just, you know, Android is obviously the hardest thing to do because you have all different kind of devices and OSs. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm sure something will come out at some point. But
and what we have to remember is that Android is rubbish.
we're entering a new era, Keith. You might have to adapt.
No, I can still say that, just with a more hateful audience.
Oh, true. That's good. Yeah. And then you can go on about Windows Phone instead.
Windows Phone.
Winning with Windows.
Don't start him on
I've got
things.
Yellow headphones. Woo!
Oh, have you seen them? They're amazing. I looked so cool walking around town the other day.
I bet you did. You marigold-eared. Right. Yeah, so Joe Danger is getting pretty good notes. Available on iOS now for iPhone and iPad. There was an issue with iPad 4, or what we're calling the iPad 4, Lightning iPad, whatever you want to call it, where people are downloading it and it isn't working. But I think they're addressing it, or already have addressed it, by the time you hear this.
Yeah, according to Hello Games' official Twitter profile, they worked throughout the night to fix it. As soon as they figured out it had gone wrong, they were working on something, and they've just pushed it through to certification now, so it should be out in the next couple of days. Should be out in the next couple of days.
Very nice. Now, working through the night, that's service for you. That's what Molyneux and his lot were doing, wasn't it? Have they stopped doing that? Have they slept now, Molyneux and the Curiosity team?
They never sleep. They're powered on.
They're too curious, you know.
Yeah, they're powered on big ideas.
Although, surely, that never has a game been so badly titled.
Yeah.
The incredulity of your curiosity.
Yeah. To be fair, like we've had our main correspondent, Harry, who's been driving himself mental writing these Curiosity Diary updates, which is now down to once a week because we've had to commit him to a psychiatric ward and he can only come out once to write his things because he was tapping walls and placemats on tables and just anything square. It was getting a bit dangerous, so we had to sort him out. But I don't know what the drop-off is on that. People are still doing it, aren't they? People are still tapping.
Well, Harry is. from his sort of diary notes, it seems like people kind of are tagging along, but it's this really, you know, it's this really central set of people that are still playing that really want to see what's inside the queue. So they're doing all the hard work while we sort of just wait for them to do it, and then we can see what's on the inside.
My curiosity died a while back, I must admit.
This game or just in general?
Oh, just in general. I don't surprise me nothing anymore. I don't even open my door because I know what's outside. It's just a hallway, isn't it?
Well, it's usually me, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've seen the yellow headphones already, so that's, you know, nothing exciting for me there. Well, that's Joe Danger is the big release. Go and have a look at that. £199, $299, I think, is what you're charging for it.
Yeah.
So go and have a look because it sounds grand. We'll quickly run through just a couple of other ones because there have been a few. The Blockheads, which is by Magic Jungle Software, which just looks like Minecraft. I actually talked to the gentleman responsible, who's the guy who did Chopper and Chopper 2, which was a helicopter game. That was
What's his name? From New Zealand, isn't he? I've met him. He's a very nice man.
Yeah, he's a charming chap. And he has knocked out a game that does look an awful lot like Minecraft and does play a lot like Minecraft. And I did obviously ask him, I was like, you know, there's no two ways around it. This is clearly inspired by a certain crafting sim, which is quite blocky. And he was like, yeah, it didn't start off like that. Apparently it was originally started off around an idea where you control animals and get them to go around and do things. But then he decided he wanted to introduce a construction and crafting element, so it needed people, and it kind of drifted towards Minecraft. It's a 2.5D affair, so you view it from the side, so it's different in that regard, but you are still chopping up blocks and, you know, getting minerals and things to build things with, and then constructing houses and whatnot, or whatever you want, really. So it is very Minecraft, but there are a couple of different things. There's an emotional mechanic, so you have to keep your little dude happy based on what you do, which puts it in more of a, you know, a sim category. And also you can have up to three little dudes, little avatars, wandering about at the same time. So it's kind of like a little bit from the sim genre with a big chunk of Minecraft thrown in. But you can download it for free on iPhone and iPad, so by all means have a look at that if you want. Another one that Mark pointed out, Deputy Editor Mark, because he does like a bit of pixel art, doesn't he, is Take My Machete, which is a sort of single-screen slash-em-up thingy from a company endearingly named Upper Class Walrus, which are the only kind of walrus I hang around with, because you don't want them lower-class walruses, aren't they?
Terrible table manners.
Exactly. Disgraceful. So it looks like a kind of Super Nintendo game. Just simple left and right controls, hack and slash with one hand, a bunch of very B-movie looking aliens keep coming at you, and you're a kid with a baseball cap, a la, I don't know, Alex Kidd or something, and you're slashing them up with your machete. I think you also get other weapons, so you can crossbow them and stuff. And there's a little dog running around as well, so there's a pet mechanic. Loads of games with pet mechanics recently. You notice the latest, is it Arcane Legends? That's it, Arcane Legends. That's got a pet buff dynamic, and
because everyone loves pets. Who doesn't like pets?
Well, I don't know. The yappy dog running around at your feet, that would be irritating, wouldn't it? In the onslaught, in the fight against the alien invasion, surely a little terrier like kicking around your heels is gonna cause you to trip up.
No, of course not. You'd want the cuteness to go against the absolute horror that you're witnessing. It's like his little cute face. Exactly. It's why people eat sorbet between bits of a meal. Is that palate cleanse? A visual palate cleanse? A puppy is a visual palate cleanse.
Oh, I thought you were saying I should eat the dog in between aliens. That's why.
Yeah, if you want. It's fine.
Well, you can have a look at that. It's a bit of retro fun. That's also free. Only available on iPhone, though. So iPad owners, you get knotted, basically. But the final one I'll talk about is under the request of Mike Rose, actually, who's been apparently going on about it this week, saying it's amazing. Dungeolot?
Yeah.
That's how I pronounce it. By Red Winter Software, which is apparently a really addictive roguelike game, which involves you tapping tiles to flip them over. Some of them have got beasties underneath, some of them have got treasure. And so you've got to, you know, tap your puzzles and find out what has what. It's sort of a simple cartoony graphic style, but apparently is mad fun. He's been tweeting about it over the course of the week. And says it's great, which you can download for both iPhone and iPad this time. Don't know how much. It'll be £149 or $199, and apparently it's great. Literally just came out today. So go and have a play. Let us know what you think about that. But obviously we haven't had a chance to play all of these, but we have played some of our own over the course of this week. So we'll go and have a little conversation about the games we've been playing this week. John Jordan, hello. What have you been playing this week?
What I've been playing, actually, it kind of sneaked out before Christmas, actually in November. There's a game called Legend 4.
Right.
And the reason that I was investigating it, because so on the biz side, we've been talking quite recently with a company called Kabam, who had a really good 2012, doing one of the top grossing games with the Camelot, Kingdoms of Camelot game, and also Arcane Empires and The Hobbit. I played a bit of The Hobbit, which is, as everyone's pointed out, is a complete reskinning of their other games. Yeah. So although apparently that's done quite well. Their games are very kind of PvP, kind of city building and then attacking other people's cities, and I guess appeal to a certain type of younger male aggressive kind of audience who have to spend a lot of money to kill each other's kind of empires. But I mean, they're not action games at all. It could be done without graphics. You know, it's pretty kind of database driven, really. But Kabam, having spoken to them, they're trying to expand and go a bit more casual. So I was just looking to see what they'd released, and they have actually sneaked out this game called Legend 4, which they didn't develop. It's from a Chinese developer called Happy Elements. And it's quite interesting. I don't know. They've released it quietly, not done any press around it or anything at all. But I don't really know what they're going to do with it, if they're kind of still experimenting. Anyone can download it now. It's not like they released it just in Canada or anything. Mm. They call it a puzzle-based RPG game. So it kind of goes along the lines of the kind of the hybrid stuff we've seen for a number of years now. So you're kind of doing a match three mechanic within a turn-based battle scenario. So, you know, we've kind of seen all that stuff before.
Oh, yeah, I see.
But it is done in quite a... It's kind of fairly simple. So there's only like four elements to start off that you're kind of... So you have attack and then your shield and then magic and blah, blah, blah. And it's just done really... it's done really nicely, I think. The English translation is not very good. Like, this is just everything spelt wrong, which is quite surprising. I suppose not from a Chinese developer, but Kabam are an American company, so you kind of think they would have done some spell checking on that. But maybe that's why they at the moment they are putting in this kind of soft launch scenario. But I wonder if we'll be hearing a lot more about Legend 4, which is on iPad. It's an iPad version, HD version, and an iPhone version.
And that's the word for F-O-U-R rather than...
F-O-U-R, yes. And it is free to play, as all these kind of games are. But, nothing revolutionary, as unlike it says in its description, but I played a few of those kind of games, and I think this one seems to do everything reasonably well. I'm quite looking forward to playing it some more.
Well, if you like that kind of sort of RPG slash puzzler with a match 3 element, then you'll probably be pleased to hear that Might and Magic Clash of Heroes is coming.
Yes, no, I did. I remember when the DS version came out.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, that was a, that's a, that's, it's out this week, isn't it?
Oh, no, it was out 24th, January the 24th.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
Yeah, similar thing, match 3 puzzle mixed with RPG elements, and yeah, interesting. Okay. What about you, Peter? What have you been playing?
So I've inducted myself into the heady world of card battlers.
Oh, poor man.
Heady?
I never got very far with it.
No. Now, actually, John, part of the reason that I decided to sort of start investigating some of these is because you kind of talked about them briefly at one point. Mm. I must look into these because I like games that other people don't like, as in I like seeking out games that people don't like and then going, right, why didn't that person like this genre? So I've been playing Marvel War of Heroes, which I think is DNA. I think I know why you don't like card battlers.
But do you like them? this is a wider question.
Well, I'm kind it's difficult because I've got to put the finishing touches to my review tomorrow, and I'm not actually sure I know. So they're incredibly basic. It's basically just an internet browser. It's just a frame that you're providing.
A lot of them are done in HTML5. I think that one's an HTML5 game because they just turn around really fast. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, there's no music, for example. That was one of the first things that really struck me. There's absolutely no music. There's gorgeous, gorgeous art straight from, you know, Marvel's pages, which is, you know, obviously some of the best comic book art in the world, is accompanied by these really basic animations over the top of Wolverine's claws slashing and the screen shaking. You know, it feels like a modern game in so much as, you know, fidelity is quite high, but it feels like a Game Boy game in terms of the actual animation routines and those kind of systems. And actually it reminds me quite a lot of top tier Pokemon. It's really simple on the face of it. You fire it up and essentially all of the combat which goes on throughout these missions, the game is basically structured into missions, and there's also PvP, but I'm not really interested in that sort of stuff. All you do is tap anywhere on the screen and
bizarre,
you win.
Isn't it? Bizarre.
Yeah. It's utterly, utterly bizarre. And I've never, as I say, I've never kind of looked into this genre before, and it really surprised me that it is that basic. But I've also been playing it for 7 days, and now I'm starting to get into the maths of it.
Oh, really?
And,
okay. You started an Excel document.
Yeah, I'm tempted actually, because the raw mathematics of it are extremely detailed. There's all sorts of different currencies and systems in play that all affect one another, in so much as there are cards that you have, for example, that you can have I think it's mastery, which is sort of one experience bar. There's an experience bar. There's strength, defense, and energy. You can boost these cards with other cards, but if you boost the first set of cards with another set of cards first, and then you do something called fusion, which is where you take two identical sets of cards and then put them together, you get a plus 5% bonus to the increase of that fusion process. So like, already, yeah. It's,
you know, it's that thing Keith always does where he just zones out? I'm doing that right now.
So it's bizarre, and I'm not sure I like myself for getting into that depth of those maths. And I'm not a mathematics person, but I can see that on the surface of things, it's a really dull, basic game with some great-looking art. And then for those people that keep at it, there is this extra layer which you can totally see why people get into them and go onto forums and are talking about, you know, plus 5 boosts and ultra rares and there's brilliantly, there's you get different packs of cards and they have different levels of rarity, and one of them is called something like SSS Rare, yeah, or something like that. You know, it's got that real Panini, I want to collect all of these things, trade them with your friends aspect to it. So within the next 24 hours I need to figure out whether I like it or not.
If you like it, or you're just kind of addicted.
Yeah, I can't quite work it out at the moment, but it's, if you haven't played a freemium card battler, it's definitely one to jump in at the deep end with.
Well, the thing that turned me off immediately is that it's by Cygames, who are the dudes who did Rage of Bahamut, which is kind
million,
of the really 10 popular,
million downloads now.
Exactly, 10 million, like the quintessential do-nothing card battler. And it's, and I did play it, and it just feels like I'm observing this practically rather than playing it.
Do you know that game, and also is it Guardian Cross?
Guardian Cross, the Final Fantasy one. I played that too, and that had a little shooty bit in it, but it was the rest of it was just
with
just
the sniper rifle
randomly tapping. Yeah, I was like, oh, I'm doing something for a little bit, and then it's just back to tapping.
But Bahama and Guardian Cross, they're the two games that I want to be playing next, just to kind of see what they're up to, because I think Squeenix might do something interesting with it. But it's interesting if you're a Marvel fan and you like collecting things, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But mechanically, I'm not sold.
I see. Okay, well, cautionary tale there from Peter. Well, I've been playing something that's actually quite good. It's called Bean's Quest, and it's not a new one, it's an old one, but I played it because I was interested in the new game, which is the Time Surfer we talked about earlier, from the dudes called Comobius, the developer is. And I was curious to see what they'd done before I dived into Time Surfer. And the previous one is called Bean's Quest. And it is a retro platformer affair, which has you cast as a small bean in a sombrero, naturally. Okay. And you have to guide him around levels in, you know, standard platform fashion. You've got a left and a right control. However, rather than executing jumps yourself, this little bean is constantly jumping. So I assume he's a Mexican jumping bean. I'm guessing that's the gimmick. So the moment the level starts, he's hopping away on the spot. And you have a left icon on the left-hand side of the screen and right on the right-hand side. So you're using two thumbs and you just guide him left and right. And therefore, the whole thing becomes about anticipation and timing. So instead of just waiting and then executing your own jumps, you have to work out when he's going to touch the floor, and then you have to, as he's going up, you have to move left to get onto the platform. And once you're on the platform, you have to be aware that the moment he touches, he's going to jump again, and there might be an enemy above you, and that could be a problem. So it's kind of a different way. It forces you to think differently about the platforming environment, because there's this element of your character that you're not in control of, which is kind of interesting. There was a learning curve for me, mainly because I'm used to playing platformers on iOS devices where the left and right controls are both on the left-hand side. So you just have, you know, the little arrows floating and you switch left and right. So I found myself instinctively using my left thumb, i.e. just constantly pressing left to do something, when actually I needed to be pressing with my right thumb. Which was, it sounds like a small thing, but like if it was a racing game, perhaps my head would instinctively tell my right thumb to get an action. But for a platform game, I look at the screen and my right thumb wants to jump or punch. And so it was a bit of a weird first 15 minutes where I'm trying to train myself to use my right thumb, which sounds weird, but genuinely it was a bit strange. But once you get over that, it is good looking. It's got a lot of really nice retro sounding sound effects, which I know is an easy thing to do and automatically kind of tickles nostalgia, warm nostalgia places in people. So you could call it a cheap trick, but it is sort of nicely done, and it does work. Art style is very charismatic. It was an interesting way of approaching the platform genre. I haven't played one quite like this before, and it's for something that you're so familiar with, your head can almost go into automatic pilot when you play these things, because you're like, yeah, it's a pixel art platformer, left, right, jump, jump, punch, punch. But and that's what I was kind of trying to get over, because it's like, no, I've just got the left control, the left and right axes, and that's it, and I have to really think carefully before I jump or before I try to move over objects, and or even just something as simple as going up on a platform to collect some items. You have to be conscious that the moment you hit the platform, he's going to shoot off up into the air again, and he may batter into someone else above, or he may inadvertently leap into another platform above you, and then you can't get down. So you're stuck up there, and you have to keep going up. So you might miss out certain items. So it becomes like oddly tactical, which I approved of. I think it's a really it was a really interesting approach to an old game, and I guess in the same way that they've gone with Time Surfer, where they've taken the endless or the continuous runner genre, whatever you want to call it, and then added this time mechanic. So they've taken something that's established, that we know how this works, like a platform genre, I know how that works, and then they've like altered one aspect of it, and it changes the way it behaves and the way that you approach the game. And it seems to be what they've done here, and for the most part, I think it really works. I've played about an hour and a half of it, and I'll probably continue doing so. It's fun, it's a bit different, and it's well done. So I will probably attack Time Surfer next, because Q-Mobius seemed to do quite a good job with these things. So that's what I've been playing. Keith, I know you've been playing a bit of Joe Danger. Did you get a chance to play anything else?
I was just doing that thing where I zone out.
You're zoning out, yes, for the whole thing. You do that whenever any of us talk, though. Yeah, I reserve it for card battlers.
I don't even know who you are. But, yes, no, I have. Ooh. I've played another game.
Get you. With
a video
game.
Plural.
Video
games you kids play.
Do share.
Well, again, only briefly, but I've been playing Noble Nutlings. By possibly the best name for any game developer ever, Boom Lagoon.
that is quite good.
Former Rovio folks.
Ah, right.
Which is the only reason I played it, actually, but I suspect they know that. It's interesting. It's kind of, you were talking about trials and stuff earlier. It's one of those balancey keeper vehicle on the straight and narrow as it goes over lots of hills and bumps kind of game, mm-hmm. where you're kind of using the accelerometer to balance it but also accelerating, and so you're kind of guiding these, I assume they're squirrels because it's about nuts, but one of them's blue and one of them's yellow and one of them's kind of brown,
like a squirrel
in various, well, the red one, the blue one is what's foxing me, but so they're in the little vehicles, various different vehicles. And you're tilting and pushing to get them to the finish line. Unlike some of the other games, when you crash, actually, it doesn't end it. It just kind of wastes time because you wait for it to reset you. And on you go. It's nicely done. It pans across the level before you start. So other ones as well, you kind of always surprised the first time you play any level because you haven't got a clue what's going on. This one, you kind of can see, and they're not that long so far. So it isn't laborious if you want to have another go. And then it kind of, it's free. So they employ, you can kind of upgrade your vehicle for each level. So kind of, you can change the wheels, or you can, the boost you get is actually chili, which kind of almost farts out the back of them to speed you up. You can recharge that. It's quite nicely implemented. And then as I'm going on, actually, the vehicle itself changes. So I kind of went for this cart kind of thing. And now I'm on, what's a bike with only one wheel? What do you call that?
Unicycle.
Unicycle, which is incredibly difficult, actually, to balance. So you're trying to power it and stay on one wheel.
Keith, how much is it like Bad Piggies? Because that was kind of the initial criticism, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it isn't anything like Bad Piggies. Mm. I mean, it isn't. I mean,
thing.
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Yeah, you can alter the thing, but it's not a case of, you don't have to, it's not a case of building a vehicle to last. You're given a set vehicle, and then you plow it down to the finish line, and it's fun and it's nicely presented. It's almost got the track itself is almost slightly 3D. It's kind of, you can see the back of it. I'm not sure that the squirrels themselves are quite as cute as they need to be. Purely kind of with my little marketing head on, I don't think they're quite, and the name isn't quite
it's weird, isn't it?
Actually, as it should be, but you know, it's one of them things. Each level's got, you know, you get up to 3 stars, and you find yourself, you know, I can imagine when you nip to the toilet or sat on a bus, you just have a quick go, and it's nicely done. It's not going to change the world, but you can, if you didn't know, you would know that these guys had been somewhere where they know how to do things, because it's a lot better than it could be, if you know what I mean. Little touches. It's so far it's probably about like a 7 or a low 8 kind of thing. It's nicely done. There's TNT along the way you can smash into, and these kind of weird little worm things, which if you hit, you get coins that you then use to upgrade. So it's kind of, the levels are just the right length, and they're just kind of packed enough, but not overwhelming. So I'm impressed so far.
Mm.
Okay, so, but the most important news of the week, Keith, is what do you think about the new DNA logo?
Well, it makes me smile.
Oh, you see, it works. Have you seen this, that DNA?
No, I haven't.
So Keith's our font expert.
Yes.
So how would you describe the DNA logo before?
Their old one? With the greatest respect, it looks very Japanese. It's just kind of... It was blue.
It was English. It was in English,
but it looked Japanese. It was blue letters for the DNA, and then the E was like a yellow, a lowercase. It looked kind of nondescript, really. It didn't really look like a game company, actually.
But now,
this one is like a handwritten thing, and they've turned the D into like a smiley face by putting two dots.
They have.
I tried to find out what font they'd use on the font finder, but it couldn't.
Oh no, it'll be a bespoke one. That'll be their own one.
It's quite a nice font, actually, isn't it? It's quite.
It looks hand drawn, which is.
It's certainly more commercial, more consumer friendly than the last one. It was a bit corporate, the one before.
And it's dead friendly because it's got a little smiley face in it. Oh,
it's lovely.
The most important news of the week is that I've currently got a trial of a Lumia 920. So that's, you know.
Wrong podcast, Keith.
Wrong podcast. Or is it?
Yeah.
Very good. Well, we did. I mean, I know you guys weren't here, John and Keith, but we did talk about the possible future of this podcast and the fact that we might start introducing news and information from other formats. Good news for Keith, because he could talk all the time about his Lumia. And whichever one you're on at the moment,
it's not mine.
Lumia fetish that you have. So you can tell us what colour your headphones are. And we can obviously talk about a bit of Android and all that sort of thing. We actually put it out to the audience last week. We said, if anyone's interested in having an opinion either way, is this a good idea, bad idea, do you care, do you not care? And obviously I had some responses and people saying yay and nay. But there's one that we pulled out from the list that was quite interesting. I think, Peter, do you have it?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Basically, we got an email from Marilyn, and I feel like she kind of raises a few questions that probably a lot of our audience are thinking right now. So let me just paraphrase this. Obviously, she loves the podcast and looks forward to every new episode. Obviously, that's at the start. Regarding Android, I'm not sure it would add much value to the podcast. When you're in need of air quotes filler, I love revisiting old games I've forgotten about, those that still offer good, satisfying gameplay. Extraordinary and unique games on Android don't seem to dominate the chat on Android forums. Well, that's another point that she raises. Mm-hmm. And also that the sort of choice on Apple's App Store is massive, and as opposed to Google Play. So she's kind of basically said that Android chat on this show wouldn't really massively interest her, potentially, just because the format itself isn't of particular interest to her, or perhaps even that platform doesn't have that many good games, I suppose. I wanted to kind of answer a few of Marilyn's questions. So, I mean, first of all, I mean, putting aside all of our faux hatred for Android,
Keith means it.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're all in agreement that there are some amazing experiences on Android and other platforms that need to be talked about, aren't we?
Yes.
So, I mean,
not Keith. But yes, I mean, I have an Android phone and I use Android a hell of a lot, and I have iOS tablets and things as well. But yeah, by the nature of what we do, a lot of us have multiple devices, and so we have interests along all the platforms, and from the people we talk to, certainly in the site and other readers, you know, most of them have interests that extend beyond just a single platform. You always have people generally have a favorite, but there is all that other stuff out there too.
I mean, so in her email she says, you know, I'm not an Apple fangirl, and I don't think any of us are really anyway.
I'm not a fangirl, no.
Well, no, but you know, we're not super fans. We're not looking only at this one thing because we're like, that is the only platform that is out there. So she does kind of get that across, and I kind of sympathize with her in that. For me, even working at PG, sometimes it is difficult to kind of look at Android and Windows Phone and even Xperia Play, something like that, and sort of see those platforms and go, oh, I'm not really sure that would really appeal. I don't really know why that's interesting to me. But as to the sort of filler comment, I don't think that's what we want to do with the podcast. We're not going to sort of go, this is the iPhone section, this is the Android section, or, you know, there hasn't been enough iOS news, so we're just going to fill it up with Android stuff. Likewise, it's not just going to be Android stuff that we talk about. There is going to be some chat about handheld, because obviously that's my area of expertise. Probably not that much, but there will still, you know, there are still interesting developments that are going on in that field. Mm. Likewise, it'd be good for us to talk about Windows Phone and kind of what Sony's up to, and so it's not going to be filler. It's going to be really interesting stories that we want to kind of bring you and then talk about and discuss.
Yeah, generally there's more than we can possibly talk about on these podcasts as it is. Even if it's just iOS, these things get trimmed down. You know, when we record it, it can go on for a couple of hours sometimes, so we have to pull lots of information out. It's not that we're necessarily searching for, we're short of information or short of stories. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have a narrow focus. Mm, and yeah, it seems, considering what we spend a lot of our time doing and what Pocket Gamer itself is actually about, which is multi-platform stuff, all the platforms, it feels like we're ignoring a huge section of you know, content that we could be addressing. And like you say, it's not we're going to focus on any specific one, and by the nature of iOS being so huge, a lot of news does come from that area anyway, so it tends to dominate in a lot of places. But Android is growing, and you know, so are all the, you know, the Windows Phone as well, and there are other things that we could be covering that are, you know, equally as interesting.
I think just historically, because I've been on the podcast probably the longest, obviously. Mm. When it started out, Android, I mean, it was there, but it was very ropey. It wasn't really a lot of install base anyway in terms of games.
Yeah.
So, you know, to that degree, iOS was the only game in town, and it wasn't. I think it was just the iPhone podcast, and it wasn't. iPad hadn't been invented. So as we've seen over the years, obviously, pretty much most games now will be coming to iPhone and Android if Apple let them release on iOS.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general, we've seen a much more kind of coherent picture where a game will go across every platform now.
Sure.
So I think that's, we're just trying to reflect that, really, aren't we?
Mm. It was really good to get that email through. And if there are other people who would like to send us an email, guess what? We've got our own podcast email address.
We do. We had one made up especially.
So if you'd like to send us an email with your thoughts on the changes that are coming up, or in fact anything that's kind of been talked about on the podcast, or anything that's not, podcast@pocketgamer.co.uk is the email address, I think, isn't it, James?
Yeah, that's the one. If you want to send us stalkery like comments, Keith would love to receive them, so we'll forward them to him.
I'm the guy sending them. What are you talking about?
And anything you'd like to ask, podcast@pocketgamer.co.uk. Go and get in touch with us. Which sort of wraps it up for this week. Go and check out the site. Everything we've talked about is up on pg.co.uk. Go and have a look at Pocket Gamer Biz for all of your developer-related stuff. And find us on Twitter @PocketGamer. And check out the Facebook page too. And like things. Because that's what you do on Facebook, isn't it? You like stuff. Because if you like it, you click like, and then a little thing says like, and that's, I think it's going to catch on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, great. Thanks for joining us, guys, and we will catch up with you all next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.